Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Pluto TV is the new leading free streaming television service. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. There's no credit card needed, no sign-up required. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. Pluto TV is free on all of your favorite devices. Download Pluto TV today.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
In the face of cruelty and fear from a lawless president, we will choose to be the nation that stands up for the human rights of everyone.
Ask yourself how somebody like Donald Trump ever gets within cheating distance of the Oval Office in the first place.
I think if we're going to force Americans to make these radical changes, they're not going to go along. You throw your hands up, but you haven't I can do it. But you haven't implemented the plans. Us governors and mayors are the ones that we have to pick up all the pieces when suddenly the government's supposed to take over all these responsibilities and there's no preparation, the details aren't worked. You can't just spring a plan on the world and expect it to succeed.
Oh boy. Well, this is getting fun now. I've been doing a lot of thinking post-Democrat debate in Michigan, okay? And to me, when you watch this whole thing play out, it was clear from the very beginning that this is a party in search of an identity. Okay, you got the Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders who are running these kind of faux populist campaigns, but they don't want to come out and do what Trump did. When he wanted to do a big thing, Trump had to take the Bushes out. He had to speak truth to power. The Bushes, I'm sure they meant well, but they really screwed it up on trade, on immigration, on all these disastrous deals. Iraq, this was all a disaster. But Warren and Sanders don't have the guts to do that about Obama and Clinton. They just don't have the guts. They can't do it. They can't bring themselves to criticize Obama. But when she's talking about all these multinational corporations running the show and, oh, it's the multinational corporations and they have all the power. Well, I don't disagree with her on some of that. Her ideas for solving that are ridiculous. But if she wants to really cut through, you can't dance around the edges and say, well, you know, the Obamas are great people and, but I want to do this. Well, it begs the question, why didn't the Obamas do that? And the point that she has to do, if she wants to win this thing, she has to break with the Obamas and the Clintons. Joining us now, Bill O'Reilly. Of course, host of No Spin News on BillO'Reilly.com, author of 15 national number one best-selling books, one of the best-selling authors of all time. He watched this all play out last night. He joins us now. Bill, great to talk to you. How are you? What were your thoughts?
The debate got a huge rating. About 10 million people watched it. That shows that the Democrats are mobilized early. I don't think there was anybody there who did anything that people will remember. You know, the debate format now is so many people that if you were to go out today and say, well, what did anybody say? And everybody looking at you like, I really don't, it's like the Tower of Babel. Mm-hmm. So it's all about perception then. It's all about who is authoritative, who might be able to beat Trump, that kind of thing. So let's run it down. Bernie Sanders opens strong. Strongest issue the Democrats have is the high cost of health care in America, right? Everybody knows that. Republicans have not been able to put forth any kind of concentrated plan that Americans can respond to on health care. So Bernie comes out and says, hey, Americans are getting whacked by health care and Amazon doesn't pay any tax. And they make gazillions of dollars. And it's true. You know, Amazon takes advantage of the tax code by depreciating things and advancing income into R&D and all of that, which is legal. But Bernie's not going to tell you that. He's going to tell you that Amazon's conning the country while people suffer. Strong. But after that, then Bernie goes downhill fast. He loses it in the sense that he's promising everybody everything. And here is the most important thing, Laura, for your listeners and every single American to understand. Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or Beto O'Rourke or any of those people get elected president and they have a Congress that's Democrat. They will start to seize private property. That is what socialism and communism is. The seizure of private property, and that includes income, assets that you may have in your home. They will tax, the wealth tax will come into your house and take your things because there's no other way to pay for what they're promising.
Yeah, there's not enough. There are not enough billionaires to pay for that
there's
many
no
freebies
way
that
the
they're
United
dangling.
States government can generate revenue to pay for what these people are promising. It's impossible. And we owe $22 trillion already. So everybody needs to know that. That if you're going to vote for them, you're going to support these people, then you are now supporting a socialist government, a totalitarian government, because the government's going to tell you what to do and how to do it in everything. And I don't think most Americans understand that, Laura.
No.
I don't think they get it.
No, they don't. And looking again at that point I made about Sanders and Warren, they fall flat ultimately, I think, because they don't have the they don't have the ability or the wherewithal, the guts to do what you have to do if you want to break from the Larry Summers, Rubin, Clinton, Obama economic policy, the Tim Geithner policy. If you want to break from that, then you have to break from it. That's what Trump did. And remember, everyone said, oh, Trump can never win. He's going after John McCain. He's going after W. He's even going after HW. And Trump said, yeah, they might be great people, but they're almost burned this thing down. And I'm going to show you why. And it was people was like, how could you do that? How could you criticize the Bushes? How could you criticize Iraq? How could you criticize these, you know, all their economic? Well, he's like, because it didn't work. And I think she has to do that with the Obamas. They have to take on the Obamas and the Clintons, big business affinity. Well, then they're not going to be able to be transformational.
This is a new revolution. You heard Sanders use that word last night. This is a new revolution. We're a woke, new country, a new vision. We liked Obama. We liked Hillary. But
it doesn't work.
It's new now, and it's what we have to do. And they're not going to go back and knife Obama.
Well, but it's you see what I'm saying, though? To be transformational,
sure.
To break, you have to break it.
I agree with you a little. I think Trump won because Americans were fed up with all politicians. I don't think it was specifically the Bushes and the Republican hierarchy.
True,
They were just fed up with all of them. And he was an outsider who came in with an economic vision that was needed, and that's why he won.
But for Sanders,
use Trump as a pinata and say he's a racist.
But that's not courageous, you know. But I'm saying that's not courageous. When I went back and looked at Trump and looked back about how an outsider comes in with all these new ideas. I mean, Reagan did that in 1980. Remember, Reagan took on the old Republican Party, and he smashed it in 76, and then in 1980 said, look, have you had enough yet? And he has a different style, obviously, than Trump and completely different people. But all I'm saying is you don't have to say they're bad people. You just to say what they did was empower the multinational corporations.
I don't think they'll ever do it. You know, I think they're going to basically say – country's corrupt. It's all Trump's fault. He's a racist. Anybody who supports Trump's a racist. They're all haters. Mm-hmm. And of course, the real hatred's coming from the far left.
Oh yeah, no. This is Bill. When you look at what's happening tonight with of course Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they're kind of running on the nostalgia tour. This is elect us, and we're going to bring all the glory of Obama back. But the only problem is neither of them have the political talent. The charisma of Obama, who was just a phenomenal politician. He was everybody liked him, so they were willing to kind of let go of the stuff that didn't work. But they're not going to have that same wide berth that they give Harris or Biden. They don't have the same talent as Obama did.
No, that's what Biden's play is going to be. I'm Barack Obama's surrogate. I'm going to do what he did. Biden tonight is the story because they got to knock him out. The far left has to knock out Biden. They have to destroy him because he's part of the patriarchy. He's an evil white man. And look at what he did in the criminal justice system. Look how many people of color he put into prison. He did busings, hanging around with the segregationist senators. They got to knock him out tonight. I don't think Harris is going to do it, by the way.
No.
I think somebody else is going to do it. Because Harris wants to just tread water. She doesn't want to get into that black-white thing. But they're going to commit Biden tonight with the criminal justice system, no doubt. And Biden better be on it, because if he isn't, that's going to be doddering Joe. That is the story tonight. And they're going to they'll have about 11 to 12 million people watching this.
Mm-hmm. The race issue is obviously front and center. And this was a moment in this debate last night, back to Warren, where Don Lemon, who's one of the most, you know, biased people on the planet. Yeah, he's a vile. Yeah, he's a vile person. This is what happened. Let's listen.
How are you going to combat the rise of white supremacy?
We need to call out white supremacy for what it is, domestic terrorism. And it poses a threat to the United States of America. We live in a country now where the president is advancing environmental racism, economic racism, criminal justice racism, health care racism. The way we do better is to fight back and show something better.
Does this ultimately tap into this great discontent because there's a big white supremacist contingent out there in America, Bill, that is just waiting to reelect Trump or what?
Obviously a bogus issue. Media drives it. 10 years ago, this could never have happened in this country, which depresses me now because I see a growing hatred based on skin color. You know, if you think that white Americans, generally speaking, are buying all this, they're not. They're not saying anything, because if you do say something, you're branded a racist. But there's going to be a ferocious backlash against the media and the politicians who drive this. America is a racist country, white supremacists, white privilege, all the people who drive this. It may not happen next month, but it's building. White Americans are seething because of all this. It has nothing to do with President Trump. It has to do with, are you kidding me? You're telling me we live in South Africa now? Is that what you're telling me? So keep your eye on that story. It's building.
Yeah, I think the idea that you had Beto up there, who's just a dopey guy. He's a total dope.
Yeah, no, he's a dope. Beto O'Rourke is a clown.
No, it's embarrassing.
All right, I gave him every chance. The man has not an original thought in his head. All he is a far-left puppet parroting things that make no sense. I mean, he's a clown. And he's got no chance. He's not even going to poll above 3. So he's gone.
Yeah, no, he's all the, and it was interesting to see Pete Buttigieg, another one, a total media creation. If he weren't, an accepted minority or people, what is called a protected minority class of being a gay American, it's not clear that, you know, someone who can't really run South Bend, Indiana would be considered a viable candidate for the presidency. But they have done everything to give Buttigieg an assist. And yet he has 0% support among African Americans. Zero.
Sure, because he represents this distant class of white people that a lot of blacks just never interact with. But I'll say this for Buttigieg, very articulate. You're going to see him on CNN. That's where he'll go after he drops out of the presidential sweepstakes. He'll be a commentator. They may even give him an hour. Because that network is just
flop.
You know,
that's a flop. That's not going anywhere. He doesn't, you know.
They can't go much longer with what they have. So I see Buttigieg probably getting an 8 o'clock slot at CNN. That's where he'll go. The guy is very articulate. He can think on his feet. Has no experience. Doesn't have the depth to run the country. But Barack Obama was elected, and so was Donald Trump. And neither of them really had a lot of experience in running you know, an enterprise like the United States.
Well,
but Buttigieg, too young, too green, but he'll be around.
Yeah, well, this is what I say. Okay, I know you've known Trump for 20 plus years, so have I. He always had charisma, okay? Obama, from my friends who were on the law review with him, he always had charisma.
Yes, he
Buttigieg
did.
Is flat as a pancake. I don't care. This is like selling water in a desert.
Buttigieg has some charisma.
Yeah, among Hollywood elites. What happened to Blue Collar Bill? Hollywood elites love him. I don't know anybody else who loves Buttigieg.
Well,
I don't
either because I don't know him. But I'm looking at him as a person who can articulate thoughts, and he can do that. If you compare him to Beto O'Rourke or Amy Klobuchar.
I mean,
come on. So Buttigieg at least can get his thoughts out there. The problem is the thoughts are shallow, and he doesn't have, you know, the recognition to get anybody to really support him. But he'll be around. You wait and see. Beto O'Rourke's going to disappear, and so is Klobuchar. But Buttigieg will be around.
Marianne Williamson is kind of the fan favorite of these debates. This is one of my favorite Darth Vader moments.
What's your response on the Flint water crisis?
My response on the Flint water crisis is that Flint is just the tip of the iceberg. This is part of the dark underbelly of American society. The racism, the bigotry, and the entire conversation that we're having here tonight, if you think any of this wonkiness is going to deal with this dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that this president is bringing up in this country, then I'm afraid that the Democrats are going to see some very dark days. We need to say it like it is. It's bigger than Flint. It's all over this country. It's particularly people of color. It's particularly people who do not have the money to fight back. And if the Democrats don't start saying it, then why would those people feel that they're there for us? And if those people don't feel it, they won't vote for us.
And then, so she was the most searched person.
Yeah.
But
I don't know really what to make of her. I thought she was Anne Rice when she came out there.
She does look a lot like Anne Rice. Good point.
Yeah, the vampire woman.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
I like the fact that, you know, some non-politician is up there running around and saying what she wants to say, but... You know, let's face it. I mean, Marianne Williamson's not going to go anywhere or do anything in politics.
No, but it's all become kind of a. Yeah, it's a sideshow. So she'll sell more books and.
Yeah,
she'll hit
no
the speaking circuit.
Yeah, be on that stage, that's for sure.
Hit the speaking circuit, Bill. Any guesses about tonight? I know you have to go. So Biden is going to have
Biden thing, and keep your eye on the Judas who goes after him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big story tonight. And go to BillO'Reilly.com for the best analysis. We'll be on right after the debate, immediately after. We'll have I'll be live tweeting and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the United States of Trump, the history book on Donald Trump coming up in September.
Oh, I can't wait.
I hope we'll talk
wait.
About that.
Oh, no. I cannot wait for your book. Bill shared a little bit about the book with me, and I'm so excited. He won't reveal all the good nuggets because he wants me to be surprised. But
no,
I cannot...
you'll get the book soon, Laura.
Oh, I can't
I hope
wait.
You like it.
I cannot wait. Bill O'Reilly, one of my favorites. Bill, thank you so much. No
spin
news.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Bye.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon. Let's go to Phil in D.C. Phil, welcome.
Hey, Laura, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
Hey, after watching last night's debate, it's clear to me that the Democrats don't want socialism or even communism. They want something even more insidious. They want to turn the USA into the DMV. DMV healthcare, DMV college, DMV immigration, DMV green energy. Trump's the winner when the Democrats talk about the real issues. They don't have anything on him when it comes to that. You know, we know partisans will be partisans. The swing voters, you know, are going to make the decision in this thing, and they understand that universal health care, unfettered immigration, tuition-free college, eliminating 40% of our economy with the new Green Deal is going to cost hundreds of trillions and eliminate tens of millions of jobs. In the end, it's like, remember the ponytail guy in the Bill Clinton debate? It's the economy, stupid. Everything comes back to that.
Well, I think that we live in a world now that it's different than it was when I first started getting into this in the 90s. And of course, I worked for Reagan in the late 80s. It is a different world. You can't approach the analysis the same way. If you did, and if you do, then you would have predicted Hillary would have won last time. So I'm not going to be one of these people who just say, oh, this is going to be easy, wave a wand and Trump's going to get reelected. I think it's going to be a fight. You're seeing it now. This is a fight. This is an going to be a fight for sanity. It's going to, and Trump's not going to make it easy at times, because look, the easy thing for Trump would be to do a campaign of "It's Morning in America. You're amazing. Our country's amazing. It's going to get even more amazing. And stick with me. And there's more sunshine ahead." That's not Trump. Okay. That would make it a lot easier on everybody, I think, if he could just, but he is who he is. Rudy said this last night on the Ingram Angle. Trump is 72 years old. He's not going to suddenly sit back when Elijah Cummings slashes him. Not going to do it. Instead, he's going to hit back. And sometimes it drives you crazy. Sometimes you get up and cheer, but it is going to be tumultuous, and it's going to make it harder with certain women who should gravitate toward this economy and voting for it. So I don't think it's necessary. At least something, maybe something changes. I think obviously they have the entire media apparatus on their side. And last time they really thought they were cruising to a win. Well, especially after the Billy Bush tape, they were like, okay, this is a joke. They had all the fireworks set in New York Harbor for Hillary. They had the plans. She had her shadow cabinet picked. Yeah, this was all going to just plug and play for Hillary. But now they don't feel that way. That Michigan focus group of the Democrats, when they're sitting around on CNN and they say, well, only one person raises his hand about whether or not they're confident Trump's not going to get reelected. Only one person. And then the other one says, well, I'm not taking anything for granted. They're going to fight. And it means that we have to be smart. By the way, do you wish some of your, you know, skin issues in the summer would be dealt with and you could actually just feel better about your skin? I know how it feels. And ladies and gentlemen, especially that skin along your jawline, it takes a beating from the weather and from everything that you're going through. Sometimes you fall asleep. Maybe you haven't even washed your face properly. Well, that all wears on your skin, and you can't let that happen. You have to have the right skincare products. And this is why with MDL technology and Chamonix's proprietary base, the brand new jawline treatment specifically targets that problem skin around your neck and jawline that really, let's face it, gives away your age. So Cheryl from Fort Wayne, Indiana, our latest fan of these products, emails in and says, wow, the first time she tried it, she could immediately feel the tightening sensation. And she's been using it now for more than a week. Results are visible. Her jawline looks better. And I think it looks younger. Well, good. All right, results are guaranteed. So look, if you don't have the experience that Cheryl had, you're not satisfied, you get 100% of your money back. No questions asked. Just go to GenuCell.com. That's GenuCell.com. You get the GenuCell for bags and puffiness free when you order. Again, you get two free gifts, free express shipping. Just go to GenuCell.com. They say home is where the heart is, and the reality is that home is where all of your precious belongings are located. Home is your sanctuary after a hard day's work. Home is a special place where you create memories with your family and your friends. So when you want to protect yourself and your most precious investment, go with the nation's number one smart home security provider, ADT. With ADT Smart Home Security, you'll have a team of professionals monitoring your home 24/7 using the latest innovations to safeguard your property. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com.
Democrats win when we figure out what is right and we get out there and fight for it. I am not afraid. And for Democrats to win, you can't be afraid either.
Congressman Delaney, your response.
So I think Democrats win when we run on real solutions, not impossible promises. When we run on things that are workable, not fairy tale economics.
You know, I don't understand why anybody goes to all the trouble of running for president of the United States just to talk about what we really can't do and shouldn't fight for.
Joining us now, Victor Davis Hanson, of course, from the Hoover Institution, author of the book, The Case for Trump. I've been dying to talk to you, VDH. This back and forth on the Medicare for All and the workability of this, when you had a CEO on stage who's actually run two healthcare startups in the 90s, became very successful as a result. And he said, look, this doesn't, here's the real world, Elizabeth. This doesn't actually cover the doctor's costs, 80% of them. So in other words, the whole system will just collapse if it's Medicare for All. How did that, reveal essential truths about this race last night, Victor?
Well, you know, there were three or four of them, Ryan and Hickenlooper and Delaney, that pretty much enunciated or summarized the old McGovern-Mondale liberal ticket, and they were considered crazy. So we're well beyond even progressivism. This is something we haven't really seen before, that you can't get on a stage and basically say that it's against the law to enter the United States illegally, and you can't give free health care to foreign residents and who broke the law. So I guess what I'm saying is that when Joe Biden looks at the fate of these four guys and the audience reaction, then you can see why he's renounced all of his earlier position. And basically, the theme of last night was, Trump is a racist. I'm going to give more free stuff to people than my opponent is. China is cheating, and Trump is on the right track, but we can't ever give him credit. We won't mention his name. And we're well beyond what Barack Obama thought left-wing Democratic agendas were. That's about it. And I think it's going to get worse tonight.
Yeah, I think it's pretty bad when even Marianne Williamson, with her crystals and her incense, was saying Warren and Sanders were way out to lunch. Let's listen.
I admire very much what Senator Warren has said and what Bernie has said. But I have to say, I'm normally way over there with Bernie and Elizabeth on this one. I hear the others, and I have some concern about that as well. And I do have concern about what the Republicans would say. And that's not just a Republican talking point. I do have concern that it will be difficult. I have concern that it will make it harder to win. And I have concern that it will make it harder to govern.
I mean, I don't know what to say when you're when Williamson says you're out there. That's kind of a problem.
I don't know what you do when you have, we're spending almost, or I should say borrowing, $750 billion now, and yet if you add up the cost of all of these proposals, it's another $2 or $3 trillion per year. And the only reason the economy's booming is that we've given incentives for people to take risk and reform and reduction, and that's all going to go out the window. So I don't know where it all leads, but some adult, I think, in the Democratic Party is looking at all this and thinking, you know, we've got to get Biden to start sounding like Delaney. And I think that's what they're going to try to do, at least pretty soon. As soon as they think he's going to win the nomination. I don't know how he gets to the primary, given where the Democratic Party is. I mean, they sound crazy, Laura, but half of their base believes all this, or maybe two-thirds. So you can't blame them. They're just appealing to people who want this stuff.
Well, Victor, I floated this with Bill O'Reilly earlier. He was on with us, and I thought about this last night as I got off the air, and I thought, here's what's happening in the Democrat Party today. You have a couple of people who have a chance, and it's like Biden and Kamala, who are essentially running a nostalgia tour. Like, elect us, and things are going to go back to the way they were under Obama, okay? Where you get Larry Summers and Geithner, and you get Rubin, maybe, or Rubin type, and you get John Kerry, and It's like the KTEL Records. It's the hit parade of the Obama era. Okay, you have that, but neither of them have the charisma, the charm, or the pure political talent of Obama, who was able to sell things even though they didn't work. Clearly, flatlining wages, etc. So they're kind of doing that. But then you have Warren and Sanders, and they actually want to blow the party up, but they don't have the guts to do what Trump did when he came in as an outsider and said, the Bushes screwed it up, and we're not going back to the Bushes. And I'll tell you why. Iraq, trade, China, open borders, we got to fix this thing. The Republicans of the past were wrong. I'm right, and here's what – but Sanders and Warren are trying to play this kind of – this jujitsu thing where they say, oh, well, I love the Obamas, and I don't want their endorsement. But the multinational – well, multinational corporations were totally empowered under Obama and Clinton. So I think they're caught – I think they're caught here.
No, I think you're absolutely right. What picked up the blue wall states for Trump was that people felt that he was a maverick. He was independent, and he was tired of 25% of the Republican agenda, which was optional like wars and greenlighting China's cheating and the open borders. And when he got when he took those positions, you're right, he could have just done what they did last night. He could have just been quiet and respectful of the Bush family, but he didn't. He went after them in a really tough way. So these, and then when you add the fact that of all the candidates, they were screaming and yelling, and yet they weren't, they sounded like they were very radical, but they were radical and they were screaming, but they weren't very courageous. I think that's your point, that they didn't want to take positions that would make them unpopular within the Obama hierarchy. And yet they acted like they were courageous just because they sounded loud and shrill and left wing.
Yeah. And I, again, the Biden and the Harris, they don't have the skill of Obama. So Obama was able to kind of pull this charm offensive off, but do a lot of traditional stuff, like traditional, I mean, kind of Clinton Wall Street stuff. But they can't, you can't do that. And I just think you have to break with the past. If you are going to go into this populist direction, as Warren and Sanders want to do, it's more populist. I don't like their solutions, but they're right about these big corporations getting, you know, a lot of leeway in the country more than, but I think about what you said, Victor. I mean, if you really think the multinational corporations are out of hand, then why are you for open borders? The people who want open borders the most are the multinational corporations.
Yeah, I agree. And remember, this kind of reminds me, Laura, of 2004. Do you remember that we had Howard Dean screaming and yelling like Bernie and Elizabeth all the way, yee-haw and all that stuff?
Yes.
And he was, let's be honest, he was vocalizing a lot of the stuff they're saying. It was a neo-socialist agenda. And then all the big corporate people and all the big donors in the Democratic Party got scared, and they wheeled out John Kerry out of retirement or whatever he was in the Senate. He was in the Senate, but he was pretty wooden. And their attitude was, we're not going to go there. We're not going to fund Howard Dean. And you can get the impression that there's a lot of people in the Democratic Party that are looking at Elizabeth Warren or Bernie, and we'll see what happens tomorrow night. And they're not going to fund that because it's not in their perceived self-interest. So, and the other people who seemed like a traditional liberal Democrat, Delaney, they're not going to go anywhere. They don't have the name recognition. They're too sensible. It's an identity politics party. I've been kind of mistaken when I keep saying, well, all of these issues that they embraced, the New Green Deal, reparations, infanticide, wealth tax, Medicare for, they don't have 50%. Support. I've said that and written that, but that's misleading because I was talking about the entire country. But if you go actually within the Democratic Party, you look at impeachment, a lot of those do have near 50% support because the party is no longer the party we used to know. And so that's what's driving this. And I don't know at what point the corporate big money people in Silicon Valley and Wall Street say, you know what, I'm either going to sit this out or I'm not going to fund it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not an exaggeration to say that to do what they want to do, you are going to have to tax overall wealth, not income, but wealth. You're going to have to go into people's homes and like catalog what they have. I mean, you can't pay for this any other way.
No, and I gave a lecture not too long ago to some people that were probably in the amount of wealth that they were talking about. And so after I watched that debate, I thought, well, what are they talking about at a 2% per annum tax on money that's already been taxed? You're getting up $20, $30 million. Now, in one way, that's nothing for those people. These guys that accumulate over $1 billion, but $20 or $30 million they don't want to give away to, they think, to the government, which they don't think will use it for all their liberal piety. So I don't know that. Those are the people who, you've got to remember, the Democratic Party is not a middle-class party anymore. It's a party of the poor and the upper middle class and the very, very rich. And without that very, very rich, they don't do very well. And I don't know if they're going to be so noble to say, you know what, I made $1 billion over my life, and every year I'm going to give $20 or $30 million so that Bernie can fund certain stuff. I don't think they're going to do it.
No. So then you're left with Biden and Kamala.
And I think Biden is going to have to clean up his act because they're going to say, well, we want Biden because Kamala is too unpredictable and she'll go all over the map and she's grating and she can be polarizing. But Biden is showing his age in a way that Trump is not, and he's unpredictable. And as he said himself, I'm a gaffe machine. He's always been a gaffe machine. And he can say anything at any time. That's pretty crazy. And so I think they're on easy right now. And what they need is somebody like Delaney that is a Biden but is younger and more sober and judicious and reliable, but he has no name recognition, and he's at this late date. Unless something weird happens, he's not going to soar. So
no, and the problem, he lost me at the TPP, too. I've got to say, this was a very substantive debate, except for the Don Lemon, who really was just outrageous. But it was they really did a good job. And Tapper and Dana Bash, who've both been, well, mostly Tapper, has been horrific to me personally. But I'm a big enough person to say he did an excellent job in that debate.
No, he did.
Excellent.
Well, I mean, he did it in two ways. Operationally, he kept the answer. He bird-dogged them, so they kept concise, and he stopped the pontification, and then he asked questions that they did not necessarily want to answer. Don Lemon was just, as he always is, he's just a megaphone for whatever cause of the day he has. But I thought they did pretty well.
No, and I mean, when you force people to say, so would you do away with Trump's steel tariffs? That was a great question.
As president, would you continue President Trump's steel tariffs? Yes or no?
Well, I would have to reevaluate. I think some of them are effective, but he's bungled the whole thing, obviously. Here's the problem with President Trump. He has a tactical move, one of many. He has a tactical move. What's the grand strategy for the United States?
So they all tried to dodge this. And this shows you how hard it is to run against Trump and claim that you really want to get tough on China, right? You want to get tough. You want to blow up all the trade deals. But in reality, Trump's already kind of taken these issues away from you, which reminds me that Elizabeth Warren should have run in 2016. That was her mistake. And Mitt Romney, too bad he wasn't a populist, because maybe he would have won in 2012.
No, he would have won. He could have won if he had taken Trump's positions. It's funny, at Hoover Institution, you go there now and you hear all of these talks from Stanford professors that come over, or some of our more progressive people, and all they do all day long is trash China on various issues, from human rights to trade to the middle class issues in the United States. And they never did it until Trump came, and they never mentioned Trump's name. It's almost Orwellian. China this and China that, but they're just parroting Donald Trump. And it's the strangest thing. And the same thing on trade and world and WTO and all of this. So he sort of kicked down the door, and now everybody's rushing through it, but they don't want to mention why that is.
Yeah. And again,
if he hadn't done that, he wouldn't have won. He wouldn't have won if he hadn't done it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Trump had to take on the Bushes, Iraq war, the trade, China, and people started looking at him going, yeah, you know something? He's right. This totally hasn't worked out, and I haven't gotten a raise in 17 years. So
yeah,
one person
took away those issues from the Democrats,
right?
They're left with
he's a racist. So now it's he's a racist. That's basically all they have, and transgender rights, I guess. He's a racist and transgenderism and abortion. That's basically it. All right. One person last night was very unhappy with Tapper. Let's listen.
Can you guarantee those union members that the benefits under Medicare for All will be as good as the benefits that their representatives, their union reps, fought hard to negotiate?
Well, two things. They will be better because Medicare for All is comprehensive. It covers all health care needs.
But you don't know.
Second of all.
You don't know that,
second
Bernie.
Of all.
We'll come to you in a second,
I do know when I wrote the damn bill. What I am talking about, and others up here are talking about, is no deductibles and no co-payments. And Jake, your question is a Republican talking point. At the end of the day, and by the way, the healthcare industry will be advertising tonight on this program.
Thank you, Senator.
Oh, so, well, you know, look, I've been critical of Big Pharma, but again, it's kind of like the old man puppets in Sesame Street, Waldorf and Statler. I mean, you got to stop every single thing. The palm farmers. You know, it's like you feel like you're being just perpetually lectured by Sanders.
Yeah, I don't think he's not wearing well. It's early in the debate season. And three more debates and people are going to tune him out if they don't already do it. But one of the things that was really interesting is he's not stupid. So when he sort of ignores the old blue-collar union voter and their blue-chip health plans, he knows that that worker is no longer part of the Democratic Party, or if he is, he's not in very great numbers. So he's basically saying to people in the auto industry or truckers that are unionized or whomever they are, is that, you know what, I don't really care that you have a better health plan than most people. I'm going to give Medicare for All, and you'll be happy with it. we're no longer going to champion upper or middle class people and workers and all the gains they have achieved from employers. It's not what his agenda is. His agenda is far broader. When they kept, remember they kept saying we're going to restructure, we have to have big change, we're going to, it reminded me of Obama saying we're going to fundamentally transform America in 5 days right before the election. That's what they're really talking. That was what the Green Deal was about. It wasn't about the environment. It's restructuring the economy in a way that a small elite at top sort of has a socialist paradigm for everybody on bottom. They kept bragging on the Canadian health system. I just got an operation in December in Palo Alto, mm-hmm. and most of the patients there were coming from Canada.
Really?
All the way to Palo Alto. And that's supposed to be the, and they weren't the super rich either. That's the model we're all supposed to follow. So. Mm-hmm. It's an echo chamber, and at some point, I think somebody's going to intervene because they don't want to go the full Mondale or McGovern, and that's what will happen if they keep this trajectory. And all the people that are warning them, they're kind of making fun of them. The audience doesn't want to hear it. And so there's no, I guess they use the term adult in the room, but there is no adult in the Democratic room. They don't exist. So.
Well, I think, again, they're struggling. They're struggling for an identity. And it reminds me of Mitt Romney in 2012. He couldn't get comfortable either in espousing what he really believed because he knew the Bush stuff was unpopular, but he didn't really want to go after the Bushes. But he knew it wasn't popular. He tried to make inroads on the China issue, but he was Romney, so he was more of an elite. And I don't think
that's exactly what it was. He was never comfortable with the working class. He went to Michigan. I mentioned in the book that I wrote about Trump that a guy said to me after blasting Obama that he was going to vote for Obama because Mitt Romney came to Michigan with wingtips and jeans. And he said, how authentic is that? So he never felt that he was part of the working class or that he felt comfortable. I think he was a good man and he wanted to.
Yeah.
People picked up on the fact that it was an act or that he dressed a different, he was sort of like John Kerry in the camouflage, in the 2004 election. All of these candidates dress up and they change their accent on whatever audience they're speaking before. And Trump, of course, just has the same hair, skin tone, accent, wherever he is. And so people say, you know what, he may be an SOB, but he's authentic SOB. And that's what they wanted. And they're not getting, these people are, except Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, I guess they're authentic in the sense that they want to take the country hard left. But as you pointed out, when they don't talk about the Obama corporate romance and what Obama really did after he left office, he didn't go out and play Bernie Sanders and community organize. He went and got a big mansion, which is, I think that's great. But once you tell the mm-hmm. country you've made enough money at some point and you didn't build that business and now it's not the time to profit, then you become sort of a corporate megaphone. It doesn't, he's not going to be a player in this Warren Bernie crusade against capitalism because he doesn't have any authenticity about it. He's part of it, deeply embedded within it.
Two people who are not stupid, David Axelrod and Claire McCaskill, both of whom have some sense of middle America. Axelrod's more of a, you know, more of an elite than McCaskill, but both of them together had interesting reactions. Let's watch.
It does seem if you're running for president that you ought to take into consideration what the country wants. And the fact is large numbers of people oppose the Medicare for All proposal if it replaces private insurance. That
right.
We've seen it in poll after poll after poll. A large number of people in this country do not believe the border should be decriminalized.
America is generally not as far along the left line as Bernie and Elizabeth. Free stuff from the government does not play well in the Midwest. I think the reality is that if you start saying that we're going to let folks coming across the border have no criminal penalty, and we're going to allow them to get access to free health care, then you are going to lose a whole slew of voters that aren't crazy about Donald Trump, but are not going to go there.
Well, what are your thoughts on their reaction?
It's almost as if they're saying that maybe I won't go there either.
Right.
It's so crazy, so crazy to the left. But there was a way to attack Trump. Not that I would have endorsed it, but they could have said, we're spending way too much money.
Right.
And and we've got this terrible debt, and let's not go into these Twitter cul-de-sacs. We don't need to do that. I'm not going to do that. And I'm going to reach out, and I'm going to try to talk about the middle class. And they didn't do that. And they can't, apparently they can't do it. Not because they don't think it's wise, but they don't think they have a constituency for it. It all reminded me, remember in 2012 when James, was it 2016, I guess it was, when James Webb thought he was going to run as an old-fashioned working-class Democrat. He did, he kind of talked about it twice, and he actually went on the stage, and then there was, he just fizzled away, just looked at the audience and thought, you know what? What am I doing here? There's nobody like me. Dick Gephardt doesn't exist anymore in the Democratic Party, and Axelrod knows that, and I don't know quite why he's lamenting that fact. What did he think was going to happen? Because this is the logical expression of Obamaism. After Obama left office, where were you going to go when he brought all these Title IX ideas and he, you know, you can keep your doctor, you can keep your insurance plan, and he just trashed that with Obamacare and all the other stuff. These people are sort of taking the next logical left-wing step after Obama. And Axelrod's sort of surprised, but who really opened the border in his second term? And who did all the executive orders for amnesty? And who said, you know, punish our enemies at the polls if you're Latino? It was Obama. So Axelrod really has a lot of culpability for the party that he helped create. Now he's like Dr. Frankenstein. He made this monster, and he's saying, God, this thing is vicious. I don't want any part of it. But he created it.
Well, one of the things that I thought was most revealing is that the guy who was another, you know, at first it was Beto, who was the pinup boy of the, you know, of the Hollywood left with the Vogue magazine cover. And then they decided, well, he's not that smart. We're going to go to Buttigieg, who's a Rhodes Scholar and short, you know, served briefly in the reserves and, you know, has those great photos of him in uniform carrying a gun. And he's also gay, so he has, like, every base covered. So then Buttigieg comes up and says, well, how are we going to get this done? Well, rip up the Constitution.
Of course we need to get money out of politics. But when I propose the actual structural democratic reforms that might make a difference, end the Electoral College, amend the Constitution if necessary to clear up Citizens United, have D.C. actually be a state, and depoliticize the Supreme Court with structural reform, people look at me funny, as if this country were incapable of structural reform.
Yeah, so end the Electoral College.
Under FDA. Yeah.
That's all going to happen.
They used to call that court packing under FDR. But, you know, he kind of imploded, too, because he can't speak more than 90 seconds without getting a sanctimonious lecture about somebody who's not a real Christian or who is not really moral or ethical like he is. So he comes across as a small-town mayor who gets on a national stage, and he has some, as you say, touches every base. He has some good ideas once in a while, but then he can't resist pointing his finger at Americans, saying, you know, you people are pointing his finger at Republicans. You're not up to my ethical, moral standards. That wears on people, too, and I don't think he's going to go anywhere. You made a good point about Beto. Beto's sort of perky-jerky, ran out of ideas about a year ago, and he keeps talking about Texas and Texas and Texas and Texas, and you think, wow, he must have won Texas.
That's exactly what I said last night. Oh, wait a second. Did you win? I must have, like, gotten that whole news cycle wrong. Exactly.
I never heard of a guy who lost Texas against, you know, I like Ted Cruz, but I can see why people feel he's unpopular. He had more money. He had all the advantages. Mm-hmm. It was a year to win if you were, and he blew it. And now he's giving lectures about how to win Texas. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. O'Reilly had a theory that Buttigieg is going to have like a show on MSNBC or CNN or something, but he's going to be a real force, you know, going forward, that he's just young. What do you think about that?
I think that's what he'd like to, but again, I don't think he has that TV presence or when you turn on somebody on TV and you watch them, you want to have humor or you want to have some self-reflection, and he has none. He takes himself so seriously, and he's so self-righteous, and he feels that, you know, that he's done all the things you're supposed to as America. America hasn't quite treated him the way they should, and I just don't think people like that. They don't like that type of personality. It's kind of like Elizabeth Warren's screech owl voice. And there's other, you know, and Bernie. And whatever, I think Biden is sort of comical, but there is something about Biden.
Yeah, real.
That's real or endearing. And so And that was what I was one of Obama's biggest critics. But he, boy, when he wanted to turn on, he was like Clinton. He could turn on the charm and he could say 57 states or Corpsmen or, you know, Hawaii's in Asia. And it didn't, you didn't, you, it was about 30 seconds later said, wow, what he just said was crazy. But you didn't, it didn't jump out at you the way these, Buttigieg and these others, Elizabeth Warren. This whole thing was so shrill and whiny. That's why Delaney and Hickenlooper and the rest of them, maybe Ryan, sounded a little bit more sober because their tone and their manner reflected the practicality, the pragmatism of their position.
I've got to say, Victor, it cannot be a good sign that Marianne Williamson is the most searched person and most popular person after this debate. I mean, what does that tell you? I mean, people just want to have fun at these debates, and they find everyone's kind of not fun. And she's talking about the dark force, and you think Darth Vader is going to pop up any moment, and they got to talk about the food is poisoning us. And yeah, I kind of think Trump could get some of those conservatarian types, food people. I don't like the big agri companies and all those subsidies to sugar. I kind of am with them on that, I got to say.
No, I do too, but I think a lot of it was emotional. That watching her was sort of like taking a hammer and throwing it through the TV screen. That's what she was good for. She just thought the whole thing was a joke, and she was kind of crazy. And it was a relief from all the other stuff, from Elizabeth Warren screaming and Bernie screaming and Buttigieg. And so I think when people got fascinated with it, they thought, "Wow, this is a foil to this whole nonsense," and so they gravitated to her because she was kind of funny, and she has a good screen presence. But and the fact that she was way out there and flaky made it even better, because I just don't think that party, that it doesn't remind me of the 2008 Clinton Obama race, not at all, or Bill Clinton earlier. It's something different. And
Elizabeth Warren should have run in 2016. Yeah, I mean, going back to having no courage. They don't have the courage to take on the Obamas or the Clintons, and she didn't have the guts to run in 2016 when actually she might have had a fighting chance. They didn't have the guts.
And they say they're courageous, too. That's the problem. They're hypocritical. They're supposed to be so courageous, but they don't take on certain people or interests.
Well, it's easy to take on Trump. That's like the easiest thing ever. I mean, they're criticizing Trump as a racist. I mean, that's just, you can do that in your sleep. As a Democrat, but taking on the Obamas, I mean, that shows, wow, who's that? Let me listen to him or her for a second. VDH, always great to have you on podcast and TV here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. This was Elizabeth Warren in one of the moments that really, I think, sunk her last night. Let's listen.
Let's be clear about this. We are the Democrats. We are not about trying to take away health care from anyone. That's what the Republicans are trying to do. And we should stop using Republican talking points in order to talk with each other about how to best provide that health care.
Well, here's the problem, okay? They did health care. It was called Obamacare. The Democrats decided they were going to fix health care. Instead, they had a colossal screw-up. They couldn't even get the website to launch with Obamacare. So premiums, out-of-pocket costs, doctors retiring at a record pace, consolidation in the healthcare industry did not lower costs of healthcare. They had their shot. So she comes in and says, oh, no, I'm going to do it better than all the experts in the Obama administration. Okay. Joining us now is Kayleigh McEnany, as the National Press Secretary for Donald Trump 2020. And she joins us now. Kayleigh, great to have you on with us. Your reaction, the campaign's reaction to what happened last night.
Yeah, Laura, it was a really interesting debate. And what we learned is that moderate Democrats, JFK Democrats, are now a bygone relic of the Democrat Party. I mean, we saw Tim Ryan and John Delaney and these candidates that poll at 1%. Expose the fact that Democrats will lose because their leftist counterparts, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and the only ones that can actually win the election, will in fact put in place radical socialist policies that will be rejected by the American electorate. So it was really fascinating to see.
When we think about the divide in the party, does the campaign see it as a divide between the nostalgia campaigns of Kamala and Biden, who are really saying basically vote for us and it'll be Obama 3.0 versus the left-wing kind of populist types of of Bernie and Elizabeth Warren?
So we see that leftist prototype being emblematic of all of the candidates. We don't let Joe Biden escape that label because, you know, as we saw this morning on Fox, you had John Delaney saying, oh, well, I'm against taxpayer-funded health care for illegal immigrants. But notably, Joe Biden is for that. Joe Biden is for the Green New Deal. Joe Biden is for a public option that would crowd out private health care. So we don't let Joe Biden or Kamala Harris escape that label. The moderate Democrat label has candidates that are statistically insignificant. So we're not letting Joe escape that.
Kelly, the concern now for Republicans is suburban women. What is the strategy of the campaign, given how hot it seems to be right now with the concern about the president being called racist and that new poll that came out yesterday? 51% think the president is racist after this drumbeat of the last several weeks, especially the last week or two. How to get suburban
women? Suburban women are obviously an important vote. Quinnipiac is a poll we don't have a lot of faith in. They're wrong often. But in terms of suburban women, we believe they're undercounted in the polls. They certainly were. If you look back at polling at the time of the Republican National Convention, President Trump was underwater with suburban women. He outperformed what those polls said. And we have a compelling message. You know, we can go to suburban women and say, we doubled the child tax credit. We put $1,400 back in the pockets of the American family. Unemployment's at historic lows. Paychecks growing twice as fast for low and middle income Americans. And we believe when suburban women get into the quiet of that voting booth, the charges of racism and sexism and xenophobia that the mainstream media peddles will be completely forsaken for the actual policies that affect their everyday lives.
Now, when we think about this campaign, the president is going to be strong in, you know, states, I think, where he was strong before, in Ohio, and looks like Michigan is actually going pretty well. But where can the president make inroads where he was not able to campaign all that much in 2016? Because it seems like the Democrats want to cordon off certain parts of the country, given how they're speaking and demonizing him.
Yeah, you're right, Laura. They are trying to do that. And look, you hit the nail on the head on your show every night. You saw these states as winnable that were previously unwinnable for Republicans. These blue-collar states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, President Trump pulled off that victory. He tapped into that populist strain, and we believe we can expand that this time around. Nevada, New Mexico, and New Hampshire are three states in particular that we're looking at. These are states where we're seeing actually movement toward the president among Hispanics, for example, in New Mexico because of China tariffs. We're seeing Hispanics come toward the president in our polling. So these previously unwinnable states for many Republicans, we think are now possibly in the Trump column.
Kayleigh McEnany, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. From Donald Trump 2020. She's a national press secretary, and there's a lot of terrific women, by the way, who are working for this campaign and at the White House. And I think the diversity, you're going to see more diversity in the Republican Party and the way this whole thing is run than anyone would have expected. And I think she's right in highlighting the Hispanic American vote and what they see with this economic revival under President Trump. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. I want to thank all of our sponsors who supported the show, including Genucel, ADT Home Security, and Pluto TV. Great partners, great companies. Support them all. America now and forever. We'll see you next time on the Laura Ingraham Podcast.